Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me are both my co-hosts, Alessandro Senatore and Caleb Morton. How are you both doing?
Boy.
My Dolphins have the best pass defense in the NFL, so my week is great.
Is it because they didn't allow any passing production last week?
Yes. And that's all we have to say about it.
So we're going to actually talk about something else. I mean, okay, you know, week two here's here. Yeah, we talk about our week two rankings, or I guess my week two rankings, and all the criticisms for them, which is available right now on Full Press Coverage. So check that out. Get the Full Press Coverage app. Download that. I'll say that right off the start to remind people. But also right off the bat, Kayla did bring up an interesting point that we want to talk about. And because I wanted to give genuine advice to Kayla, not lie to her, because it is a league we're both in, it had to be on the podcast. Otherwise, I'm just going to mislead her and not give her this advice. So, Kayla, why don't you talk about your conundrum in our Full Press Dynasty Pod League?
Yeah, so as everybody knows, I've never played Dynasty before, but after Philip Lindsay got injured on Monday, I moved him to my IR spot and picked somebody else up because, you know, the Denver has reported that he's going to miss a couple weeks with a turf toe. So unfortunately for me, I went to edit my lineup today, but because Lindsay is now listed as questionable and injured reserve, I cannot edit my starting roster until I move Lindsay from my IR to my bench. But I feel like I have good value this season and in years to come from pretty much everybody on the roster. So I was looking at Lamar Miller and Devontae Freeman, who obviously are not signed right now, but Lamar Miller is scheduled to visit with the Colts, and Devontae Freeman has had met with four teams in the last few weeks. So obviously they'd be on the block, but we know how hard running backs are to come by, and they're two veterans who have spent time with teams in the league. So I'm nervous to drop them. I also have the backup to Derrick Henry, who is obviously Darrington Evans, who I believe is a rookie. Don't really know much about him. He is questionable right now, so I was also kind of looking at him, but I'm a little nervous to move on from him in case Henry's knee or hamstring flares up. And then I do have a plethora of wide receivers. I'm not really inclined to drop somebody like Justin Jefferson, who could emerge in Minnesota, especially after Diggs was moved. I picked up Russell Gage, who had a 100-yard game week in the shootout with Seattle, who plays a weak secondary in Dallas that I want to play. I also have Conley, Chris Conley for Jacksonville, who I'm waiting to see hopefully pick up in the future, especially when their team gets better. I feel like they could use Conley. I have the number two wide receiver in Washington, who, God forbid, if anything happens to Terry McLaurin, suddenly he's a number one receiver. And I know the team's not very good, but having number one guys on teams is always a benefit to you. More again, that's a looking long term. You're in a dynasty league pick. And Duke Johnson in Houston, obviously he's a pass catching back, but in a PPR dynasty league, that's helpful. And then I do have Tua Tagovailoa for the future and Nick Foles. And, you know, that he could technically be on the chopping block too, since he's not the starter in Chicago, but he is a Super Bowl winner and would start on a lot of other teams who are struggling with quarterbacks. So I'm in a little bit of a interesting place, I'd say.
I don't know if you noticed, Caleb, but you are going head-to-head against Alessandro this week. So, Alessandro, do you want to say anything? If you want to exclude yourself from this conversation, you can. But if you want to say anything to Caleb about how, you know, operating the back end of her lineup and her roster, what would you do there?
Okay. So, Caleb, I'm not going to mislead Caleb because, yes, while I do play her, I want to make sure when I whip her butt that it's going to be fair and square, okay? And from looking at your roster, I could see at least... Okay, so I would... Okay. There's a way that you keep Lamar Miller and Devontae Freeman if you draw Sims from Washington. I know that he got some points last week, but it's still a bad offense that was able to eat up a very bad defense that was hurting. So I don't see them doing that great against Arizona with Buda Baker and Chandler Jones and Isaiah Sims. I don't foresee them doing anything good. And I understand it's Dynasty, But if you want to keep both Lamar Miller and Devontae Freeman, he would probably be the guy we get rid of, because Russell Gage actually did something last week. Yeah, to the tune of 16.9 points. You already know Devontae Parker. Darrington Evans is right behind. Derrick Henry, and yes, he is a rookie, and he is a very good rookie. He's just a little banged up right now, so he's not going to play. You got Duke Johnson, which I would consider dropping him. I thought that was David Johnson, but you have Duke Johnson. And so Duke Johnson and Sims are the two I would consider dropping. Justin Jefferson's a rookie. You want to keep rookies. Devin Duvernay, he's also a rookie, and he can actually do good. I've seen his tape, and he's actually not bad. I actually kind of like him. So Sims and Duke Johnson, I would drop either one of those two. If you, and assuming you're going to keep your entire starting lineup, which I would. Because I've heard stupider things, trust me. So I would, between Sims and Duke Johnson, I would drop either one of those two. I mean, Duke Johnson, he's not going to make much noise, considering David Johnson is looking to, like, his old form, at least for last week he did. And Sims is on a bad offense that he'll probably get smothered down the depth chart once they get healthier and get some more toys.
So is part of the thinking for Duke Johnson then the fact that, you know, I am bringing Philip Lindsay in, who is another running back, so I don't necessarily go uneven in that regard?
Mm-hmm. Well, Ed, actually, I want to comment on that. That just that idea of being even, like needing the same number of wide receivers and running backs. So I got a quote from two sources here. One is, and you know, both of their ideas combine to give me the answer on who you should cut. Because I do think there actually is one player that's pretty clear, and Alessandro didn't mention him. So the idea, it sounds like you want to build running back depth. Jordan McNamara, author of The Analytics of Dynasty book, which he's written 2 years now. He's got, he had an updated version this year. It sounds like it's something he's going to do every year. He's quite an expert on Dynasty analytics, especially. And roster construction. And one of the things that he's been preaching this year all through the offseason was have more running backs on your roster than wide receivers. Wide receiver scoring so being as flat as it is, between five different wide receivers, we'll take the five on your bench, right? Between, Devontae Parker, Chris Connolly, Russell Gage, Steven Sims, and Devin Duvernay. Any one of those at any given week could be startable in your lineup. You know, Parker's probably excluded from this conversation because his target share is high enough, but I think like Conley, Gage, Sims, Duvernay, all of them at any given week could all be valuable to you as a starter, but it's tough to know in advance when those weeks will be. Running back, there's more predictability. You know, starter got hurt, the backup is going to be in line to get a lot more carries. The starting wide receiver gets hurt doesn't necessarily mean that the next receiver on the depth chart gets his target share and replaces that one for one. So I think less predictability with the receivers. And again, Jordan McNamara's idea of hoarding more running backs would lead me to say, and I think you want to go with this, Kelly. You want to keep Lamar Miller, Devontae Freeman, Duke Johnson, Philip Lindsay. You want to keep all these backup or running backs that have a chance that if, the right situations come and suddenly they're the starter, they could get double-digit carries in a week. And if it's with a good offense, they could score. So I get the idea of holding all those players, which leads me towards the wide receiver. Peter Howard talks about, especially from a rookie standpoint of view, but I think this applies to even veterans. For him, specifically rookies, 10%. If a rookie wide receiver isn't going to get 10% market share, they're probably not worth holding on to because their value is going to be so low that you could drop them and no one want to pick them up. You can go and get them, like let's say you dropped Devin Duvernay right now and he did nothing this year. He's probably still available in this waiver wire in this league next year, in the next offseason, if you really want to, right? So there's that idea. But sticking with that 10% rule, I look at Chris Conley. Last week, the Jaguars, they got the win, so Gardner Minshew only had to throw 20 times. But Chris Conley only saw one target. That's a 5% target share, not the 10% that we're looking for with rookies. Laviska Shenault saw four targets. Keelan Cole saw five targets. DJ Chark only three, which is a little low for him. Again, the game they won that they were leading for, it seems like, for most of it. So obviously Gardner Minshew's not going to throw only 20 times. But if Chris Conley's already behind Shenault, Cole, and Chark, I don't know that he's someone that you want to keep. Because, I mean, he doesn't have, like for Duvernay, like Alessandro mentioned, he's a rookie. You don't really want to be dropping rookies. You want to let them develop if that's the thinking long term. Whereas Conley, how old is he? He's already 27. I mean, at this point, he's right in the middle of his prime. If he hasn't done it, I mean, last year, getting 90 targets, 47 receptions, 775 yards, that was all career high. Very likely, that's probably his best season of his career. I don't know that he's going to duplicate. I don't think he's getting 90 targets this year. Not if he's getting one target week one. That clearly tells me he's not as featured of a part of an offense as we thought. I know Brad Harvin was talking him up, but the evidence kind of showing maybe not the case. So actually, I think Chris Connolly's the drop, to be honest. I don't think it's Steven Sims, because I like your thinking, Kayla, of, you know, he could be the number two in Washington as a slot receiver too. PPR, well, half-point PPR league here. That does possess value. So I think the call here is Chris Conley, actually.
Okay. And I do understand the thinking, too, with people going, you know, Steven Sims, if Kelvin Harmon didn't tear his ACL, then he wouldn't be the number two guy on that roster. So I understand going forward, people might be a little concerned about that.
I'm not sure that that's the truth, to be honest. Because I think Steven Sims' role as a slot receiver is always going to be there, whether Kelvin Harmon more of a perimeter guy. So if Steven Sims was going to be the number two target this year, that was going to happen regardless. So I'm not as concerned about, again, Kelvin Harmon, I think, was a fifth or sixth round rookie pick who's now going to be next year coming off a torn ACL. I think for Steven Sims, the bigger competition is rookies coming in or veteran free agents outside. I don't think it's the competition for him is on the team.
Okay.
Now, Duvernay also only saw one target.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking long-term there. I don't know how long Willie Snead is going to last on that team. Yep. And I think at some point in Lamar Jackson's career, we saw with Cam Newton too. Yes, Newton had a lot of rushes last week, but, you know, he was throwing more in Carolina. And I think, you know, as they get older, they can only take so many hits a game, even if it's still more than the average quarterback, which just turns into either giving it to a running back or, you know, tossing it outside. But while, you know, J.K. Dobbins, that argument is strong that he could be there for the foreseeable future, and so is Gus Edwards, I think there's more upside with Duvernay. So even though I wasn't high on him in the draft, the potential to be a top target in the air is still there, at least for now.
All right. So what, and now that we've talked through it, what is your thinking, Kayla? Which player do you think you're going to drop?
I liked what you said about Conley, and I also liked what Alessandro said about Duke Johnson. I'd want to look into some other stats that I can do after the podcast, because going through them would be boring right now, and just kind of look at game script and just overall personnel on teams. But I think it would be between Chris Conley and Duke Johnson. And I get what you're saying about you not needing the wide receivers, especially if they're behind certain guys. But I thought Duke Johnson be used more even in his first year coming over from Cleveland, and he wasn't. So that puts up a red flag for me, too. But also with Conley, like you said, being behind Laviska Shenault already, that is also a red flag. So I think it'll be down to those two.
And if I'm seeing it correctly, you have no players playing in Thursday's game tonight between the Bengals and Browns. So you don't necessarily have to make a decision tonight. You can wait till Sunday morning. You just, at this point, I guess you just can't add players, but it seems like your problem isn't adding, it's dropping, which, I mean, to be fair, a lot of podcasts talk about which players to add, which is important. I mean, I think there were some clear ads out on the waiver wire this week.
I picked up Russell Gage, who was already mentioned in Atlanta.
True. Yeah.
And in some leagues, I also picked up CeeDee Lamb. And in one league, I picked up Jamison Crowder. So can't believe he was available. But I went with Russell Gage. I'm not going to be mean to the Jets today. I picked up Russell Gage because not only did he have the best game of his career with 9 catches on 12 targets for 114 yards, but he had the same amount of catches and targets as Calvin Ridley. And the only reason that I don't feel like Gage got any love is because people, A, don't really know about him, especially because he's the number 3 now after the Falcons released Justin Hardy. Shout out ECU, or go Pirates. I also was inclined in Gage because they're playing Dallas this week, who is going to be without linebackers Leighton Vander Esch and Sean Lee. And their defense, you know, even at corner with Byron Jones leaving in free agency, is kind of already depleted with different holes. So I think this screams shootout, like what Atlanta had last week with Seattle, even though most of it came in the second half. Matt Ryan still had 450 yards, led the league in passing. And I think Gage is on track. And with Julio Jones appearing on the injury report with a hamstring issue, Jones might not go. So I've seen reports where it's like, oh, he's taking, you know, time and practice, he'll be fine, whereas other people are saying, you know, hey, it could come down to a game time decision. So suddenly if Julio Jones is out, that opens up Russell Gage and Hayden Hurst at tight end. So I like the possible amount of points being scored this week. And then on the flip side, with our opponent CeeDee Lamb, I know I asked you guys earlier about what you thought about him, so you can share that after this, because in writing my article, I was trying to see if CeeDee Lamb made as much of a case to be on a sleeper pick this weekend. I think he does, especially because tight end Blake Jarwin, who was showing a lot of promise, went down for the year, is on IR after tearing his ACL. And I'm still looking at the target share that Randall Cobb gives up going to Houston. And right now, I feel like the only person that's going to garner those targets is Lamb. Yeah, they'll be distributed out here and there to Cooper and Gallup, but if I'm defenses, I'm on Cooper, leaving Gallup and CeeDee Lamb open, especially in Atlanta, who has a lot of holes. But yeah, you guys can talk about Lamb or Gage or whatever you want.
I feel like Lamb's probably not necessarily available in a ton of leagues, but if he is, yeah, definitely go out and grab him. I think Gage is a perfect target because he got so many targets. And again, slot receiver, any type of PPR league, I love that, especially for an offense that, looking at that defense, is probably going to be close to, I mean, they were, I think, at the 680 attempts last year. Maybe not quite to that level, but if it's anywhere close to that, you know, that the third target behind Jones and Ridley should be productive, and right now it looks like Russell Gage. So yeah, I love that call.
Thank you.
I actually have a conundrum I would like to bring up both of you, because it involves who I picked up. So there was a guy who decided that he didn't want Zach Moss, and he didn't want Zach Moss, and he didn't want Michael Gallup. I, being the illustrious self that I am, snatched them both up. Yes. So, my conundrum now, I have Julio Jones, I have Juju Smith-Schuster, I have Michael Gallup. Are those three the good ones to play? Because on my bench is DK Metcalf, Henry Ruggs, Brian Edwards, and, hold on, I gotta pull up my thing real quick. Whoopsies. And whatchamacallit? What's his name? Michael Hardman. There we go. That's the one.
You have to play DK. I think.
Okay, so I disagree with you, Kyle.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I do, but you can go ahead.
Oh, it's like this.
Go ahead, Kyle.
I think I would play DK over. So it's not Juju. Who else is the? I would play him over.
I have Juju, Gallup. Julio, Gallup. DK.
Yeah, I would play him over Gallup. No one else on the bench. I think that there's no one I'm benching Gallup for except for DK. But, I think, you know, you play both of Julio's out. I think, you know, I would have Gallup as the, and that, and it's the same game, right? So, like, that, you know, I think it's a 1 o'clock anyway, so it doesn't matter. But that's, I think that's a good pivot of, if Julio's out, I'll play Gallup. So, yeah, I would play Metcalf, I think. Obviously, Kayla disagrees.
Okay, so, and I'd say put in Metcalf, but I'm kind of on my train of thinking from last season with my start, sit, sleepers, bust, all those things. I think Metcalf is a huge bust alert this week. I know that he had 4 catches for 95 yards last week and a touchdown on his 8 targets. He obviously has big playability and he's a threat. We didn't really see New England secondary tested last week when it came to wide receivers, because Miami's are terrible. And Devontae Parker left, so that didn't help. But I think Metcalf is going to draw Stephen Gilmore, and Tyler Lockett's going to avoid him because Lockett could be spending a lot of time in the slot. So I think Metcalf could seriously be hindered, maybe even negated, if Gilmore's on him. I don't think Gilmore is the best cornerback in the NFL, but when it comes to this matchup, I think Russell Wilson is going to try to avoid As many passes as he can in the direction of Gil. I think there's a case made for Metcalf because he is at home. New England is traveling. The East Coast, West Coast swings is hard, especially now with COVID. I mean, we see with the 49ers, they can't travel to New Jersey until Saturday night for their game on Sunday at 1 and the time change. But I think that... I think a lot of people think that this game could be high scoring, but I'm leaning more towards the over under at 45, which means three touchdowns. And if that's the case, I'm more confident that Chris Carson's going to score, Tyler Lockett's going to score, or Russell Wilson's going to keep it before Gilmore gives up big plays to Metcalf. So I'm not super excited about the Metcalf pick. I would also sit Henry Ruggs that you were talking about against New Orleans. I know that he, you know, had a big catch. I think it was like 45 yards and almost got a touchdown last week against Carroll. But I think it's a tough matchup against Marshon Lattimore, another quarterback that is really good at shutting down number one receivers. And right now, Ruggs is the number one receiver for the Raiders. Also, the Raiders have never played in the stadium before, so it's not like they have a home advantage here. So I think that even though Michael Thomas is out and New Orleans might have to switch up their game plan, I'm going to struggle seeing Ruggs getting Waller or running back Josh Jacobs. So I don't necessarily know that this game is going to be high scoring either. So I would chase points and not play either of them.
And you're looking at the, you know, the Falcons Cowboys game, the highest projected total of the week. You're going to have receivers on both sides with Gallup and Julio. That does make sense.
Well, see, to me, I get both your thinkings. And Kayla, I do think Stephon Gilmore is the best corner in the league because, good God, that man's a monster. But
that's fine. I didn't ask.
I think the lineup I'm going to go with is Julio, hoping he still plays, Juju, and Gallup, because I want a double points of the Dallas-Atlanta game because both those secondaries are weak and they've been torn up. And with this defense taking a hurting on both sides, I think it could end up being a shootout. I like Metcalf here, but I think Kayla's right. He may draw Gilmore, and that is a scary matchup to think about. I'm not going to play Crowder because I have him too, but I didn't bother mentioning him because he's out. And I have Edwards and Ruggs, but they're pretty much in the same boat against New Orleans. So I think I'm just going to roll with Gallup, Juju, and Julio.
And to add to Kayla's point, you know, if Ruggs draws Marshon Lattimore, Brian Edwards probably draws Janoris Jenkins. So it's not as if the second wide receiver gets a better corner matchup there. So it's, I like what Kayla said of it's going to be mostly Waller and probably a lot of Josh Jacobs. And Josh Jacobs got 6 targets last week, so he is catching passes now too. So they probably will be the top 2 targets on the team this week. So it sounds like for Alessandro, you're just debating between Juju and DK. But again, as Caleb has alluded to, he gets Stephon Gilmore, who apparently isn't the best corner in the league. Now, I do want to get to the rankings, but Kayla, one word answer. If it's not Stephon Gilmore, the reigning defensive player of the year, I am genuinely curious. Who do you think is the best corner in the league?
Marshon Lattimore.
Oh, okay. I was hoping you'd say Jair Alexander, but I know it's not that.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I just feel like on a consistency level, Marshon Lattimore does better. And without having stats in front of me and downs of their game and, you know, what the situation was and who they faced and the competition level there, I don't want to dig myself a hole, but I've thought Marshon Lattimore is the best cornerback in the league for years, and I'm gonna stay by it until I'm proven otherwise.
Yep, right, that's fair. I do think he's among the elites.
Also, I think Juju Smith-Schuster is a must start.
Well, and I mean, because Broncos corner seems like it's the one weak spot of that defense. Really good front seven, although going to be tested with some injuries. But we saw Corey Davis go off against him. So I do lean Juju as well. If you're deciding between Juju and Metcalf, I would lean that. But all right, here we are. Rankings? Or is there any other topics, any other questions to cover?
Kyle, did you have any waiver wire pickups that you felt good or that people should know about?
I mean, I've been listening to podcasts. It's the obvious ones. Malcolm Brown, I think, is my highest priority. I know some people have been saying Nyheim Hines. I would prioritize Brown over Hines simply because You know, Brown, to my surprise, is also the pass catching back. Nine receptions is his highest season high ever before the season. So clearly had not been a pass catching back, something he, it seems like he's worked on, because he was out there catching passes. I think he made almost half his career high already in 1 week. So if he's become that full down workhorse, maybe, as much as I am high on Cam Akers, it looks like it's going to be a while before he overtakes him. So I think Malcolm Brown is going to be startable most weeks for a while now. Whereas Hines, I do like Hines. I think he is also worthy. He's one of my, I would put him either two or three. I think to me, Malcolm Brown is the clear number one, assuming he's available in leagues. And then at two and three, it's a tie between Nyheim Hines and Peyton Barber. With Peyton Barber firmly established himself as the goal line back for Washington. And yes, they won't win every game. So that last week was the perfect game script for him to do that. But they, you know, still 10 red zone carries, 6 carries inside the 5. It seems like he's going to be given the opportunity because he succeeded with those opportunities, getting the 2 touchdowns, bringing the Washington team back from, you know, because I believe his second touchdown is what put, or one of his touchdowns is what put them in the lead in the game for the first time. So Ron Rivera is going to see that, going to have confidence. So I like Malcolm Brown. I would say Malcolm Brown 1, probably Nyheim Hines 2, because he's going to catch more passes. So, you know, if it's non-PPR league, drop him down a bit, but any type of PPR 2, and then Peyton Barber 3. I spent in the Fantasy Focus Listener League, it's two leagues, two 14-team leagues, so running back was super sparse. I spent $42 of my $100 fab budget on him, just to kind of give a reference point. Wasn't quite willing to go to 50%, but again, 42%, just to ensure I got him. I know Miles Gaskin also went for 40% of the budget as well. So it just seems like, you know, the running back's available this early, go out and grab him. I know this episode's a little maybe late for waiver wire claims, but if, you know, any of these players are available as free agents, first come, first serve, go grab them. On to the rankings. Not to victory lap, but I was right on Davante Adams at wide receiver 1 last week, because he was the fantasy player number 1.
Who could have ever guessed that?
Well, I mean, again, Davante Adams versus rookie corner, you saw he was open on every single play. In fact, it could have been bigger. He dropped a touchdown in the end zone. He could have had 3 touchdowns in that game. So we'll have to settle for 14 receptions, 156, and 2 touchdowns for the highest scoring fantasy score of the week in either half point PPR or full point PPR. So, yeah, I have Adams at number 1 again. Spoiler alert. Because if he might... if Jeff Okuda, we'll see if he's healthy enough to play, but if he's playing Jeff Okuda, that's another rookie cornerback making his NFL debut against Davante Adams. So I kind of see a repeat of last week, to be honest. So first off, I guess I'll start off. Is there any objections to Davante Adams as wide receiver 1? Or do either of you want to present a wide receiver that you think can dethrone him this week?
No.
All right, Kyle. 4 things. All right. 1, I just realized DeAndre Hopkins against Washington. Yeah, actually, I think he should be number 1 because, good God, I mean, Detroit has better corners than Washington, in my opinion. So, I think DeAndre Hopkins is about to eat and eat. 2, Chris Godwin, he is not likely to play.
I was going to ask correctly. That.
Yeah.
Well, because of the concussion, so that he may be out. We're going to have to wait until tomorrow before it's confirmed or not, but all the indications are he may not play.
And I will say, because I do have him at 5, just to give the listeners credit, because I love the matchup so much. And unlike a hamstring injury, if you know, if he's clear as concussion, he's 100%. So that's my thing, is if he's in, that's where I have him ranked. If he's out, I'll take him out completely. But without knowing if he's going to be, I thought it was kind of, I didn't feel like I could lower him, right? Like, I think legitimately, if he plays that game, he's going to feast against the Panthers. So that's why I have him at 5. But I you're right. He could very well not play. And then that shifts a lot of things around. So you can continue on your other things.
And then another person that may not play or is looking like he won't play is A.J. Brown, because he has a bruised bone. I'm trying to pull up the official. He has a bruised bone because banged up. And with A.J. Brown and Corey Davis banged up, it's time to grab Adam Humphries and Geno Smith off the waiver wire, because they are more likely to grab targets this week. That's a tweet I saw. Here it is. Titans wide receiver A.J. Brown missed practice day with a bone bruise in his knee that is jeopardizing his availability for Sunday against the Jaguars and possibly beyond. He's likely to be week-to-week with his injury. And then Stefania Bell, which is one of the people on the Full Press, or not, I mean the Fantasy Pod for ESPN, which I if you guys want to know something about some injuries, follow her because she is great about it. She writes, bone bruises are no joke. Resting and avoiding excessive loads is key to preventing from worsening and getting back. So if she's tweeting about it, then I am a little bit more worried that he will probably not play this weekend. So A.J. Brown is definitely down for me. And then homer pick here, but it's not my homer pick. It's Kayla's homer pick. Allen Robinson. Robinson, I think, should be a lot higher because you have him
at 20.
At 20, I think that he should be in the 14 range, 13 range between Cooper Kupp and T.Y. because the Giants secondary got 8 up against the Steelers, and I understand this is two different styles of teams that we're talking about, but their cornerback situation is abysmal, and take that from a Jets fan. It's abysmal. So I think Al Robinson is about to eat this week, so I would put him a lot higher.
I hope you're right, since I'm starting him everywhere.
So one thing I will say, I think you're right about Brown. I think I definitely, even if he plays, I think I will lower him down, so... that's one that Robinson will at least be 19, because I do have Brown at 19, so move him up one. But you know, I will revise this because the Giants is a good matchup. I will say, part of me wonders, is it almost too good of a matchup? Or are they going to run so much? I know because I have David Montgomery up at 19, so I think that's maybe where that leads. This is honestly, I will say, the wide receiver, we'll say 10 through 20 is, it's almost impossible to rank. I could see so many different combinations. You could put any of these guys in any order, and I could kind of see an argument behind it. So just this week, I guess Allen Robinson fell low, and yeah, kind of looking at 20 is pretty low for him. So maybe that will require some revising.
My last one is Jameson Crowder. He needs to be off the list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now that we know he's out, yeah.
Yeah, because of the hammy, he should be out. And in his place, I'm talking right below Stephon Diggs, kind of in his place, I would put Bashaud Perriman.
With the corner injuries to 49ers, that actually makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Well, they're thinking about sending him to the slot role, and we'll have Josh Malone on the posty, we're probably going to run two tight end sets.
I do have a question for you, Kyle, not necessarily about placement, but just how a certain receiver you think is going to do this week, and that would be Keenan Allen at home versus Kansas City. And Alessandro, you can answer this too, but since we were talking about Kyle's rankings, I want to ask Kyle first.
Well, I will mention the placement just to give our listeners context. I have him at a wide receiver 14 this week, and my thinking is the volume probably should be there. In terms of target share last week, it was pretty identical between the top three. Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry both had 8. Mike Williams had 9. So it seems like very quickly Tyrod Taylor has established those are his top three. So we know that for sure. And now I think this week what it'll offer, because that was a game where it was kind of an offensive struggle, and eventually the Chargers seemed to get things going once they got a lead. They kind of just tried to run things out. They're playing against the Chiefs, who have it's the highest spread this week at 9 points. So as the biggest underdogs, I'm assuming the Chargers are going to be throwing a lot this week in order to try and beat a divisional opponent. This, to me, this isn't a game where Anthony Lynn's going to go in and say, oh yeah, let's try and run it out and try and hold on to the hope for the best. I got a feeling they're going to come out firing. It's the only way that they're going to be able to take this Chiefs team on. It's this thorn in the division. And knowing that Anthony Lynn may be coaching for his job this year, I think the game plan this week is going to be, let's try and take it to them. We've brought in Tyrod Taylor, identified him as the guy. Prove it this week. And I could see him peppering Keenan Allen a ton. It does mean he may see some Tyrann Mathieu. I don't know that Matthews ever really shadows anybody. I don't think that's going to be the case this week. So there may be some tough coverage there, but as we saw last week, the rookie corner, whose name's escaping me, he played pretty well. And he was tasked with covering, he had Brandon Cooks at times. I think there was a player too. He was covering Will Fuller and seemed to manage. I know Fuller had a big game, but Fuller had a lot of catches, but not much after the catch. So, limiting damage there. So I think it's tough corner matchups no matter where it is. And I mean, even, you know, mention Tyrann Mathieu. Tyrann Mathieu, one of his famous things is taking out tight ends. So if anything, he might be more glued to Hunter Henry than he is to Keenan Allen. So I think just the nature of the game, the potential for it to be a lot of pass attempts for the Chargers, this is the week we see. Does Tyrod Taylor view Keenan Allen as that alpha target like, you know, Philip Rivers did? And I think if there's any matchup to find out, it's probably this week against the Chiefs. So I'm banking on that. I know DFS plays, writing a Yahoo article for Going for Two, probably out tomorrow. Depends on when you listen to this podcast, of course. But one of those is to play Keenan Allen in Yahoo this week because he is much lower price. He's definitely not ranked wide receiver 14 in Yahoo this week in their prices.
L'Jarius Sneed was a fourth round pick of Louisiana Tech by Kansas City in this past draft. He played corner for 3 years and safety in his final year. So I just want to make sure we got that right because that kid was phenomenal and I enjoyed watching him. As for that game for Keenan Allen, I think that he's going to have a tough time. And I think that he may actually get shut down between Tyrann Mathieu and Sneed, assuming that he does go at number one, or Juwan Thornhill, which is their other safety, who has played corner occasionally. Now we got Tyrann, we got the Honey Badger there, and we got all these good guys there. So I think Keenan Allen may suffer just a wee bit, but I think he's still very playable.
So he's someone, like you're giving the example, you'd rather have Allen Robinson, for instance. Like that's somebody you'd probably move, he's the one of the players you at Allen's expense to move up Robinson. Okay, makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I could potentially play both of them in a league, but I also have guys that, I could start over Keenan Allen, just kind of still not knowing how the quarterback situation is there for the Chargers. But I always harp on number ones being somebody to count on, and I don't think Kansas City has, a lockdown defense. I think, they will be exposed during the season, suffer a couple losses, but it just... Just the matchup was intriguing, and I just wanted to know what you guys thought about Allen. That was all.
Yeah, so Allen, I could actually kind of see them kind of closer together. I'm looking now. I probably should place Allen Robinson. I'm thinking 16. I think I'm going to, ahead of A.J. Brown, obviously, ahead of Julian Edelman, ahead of Robert Woods, just because Woods, unfortunately, is probably going to get Darius Slay this week in Philly. That's why I have Cooper Kupp at 11. I think this week's the better week for Kupp. Last week, I had Kupp lower, I believe. Yeah, I had Woods as the higher one because I thought the matchup suited him better in Dallas, but I think that the slot is the better place to attack Philly. Again, avoiding Darius Slay, who I think will be shadowing Woods. We'll see. So I could see, again, Robinson ahead of Woods. Kayla, I know you mentioned Tyler Lockett as maybe the not seeing Stephon Gilmore as a positive. He might see the McCourty twins, though. Either one of them on him is not necessarily favorable either. It's a tough secondary for both DK and Tyler Lockett. So I think Robinson ahead of Lockett makes sense. So I think right there where I have Lockett at 16, I think Robinson at 16 there, I think makes sense. Because, again, especially if Chris Godwin's out, I like Mike Evans against that Panthers defense. And if anything, if Godwin's out, I'm probably moving up Evans from where he is at 15, probably to in the top 10. Right behind Amari Cooper. I do like Amari Cooper this week. I know I'm not the biggest fan, but this is a week to play him. A weak secondary against the Falcons, against an offense that probably will force the Cowboys to throw the football a lot. He played really well last week against Jalen Ramsey. I was really impressed with Amari Cooper. Catching the football, because he's always someone who will get open. He's done that his whole career. Wide open drops, right? Which is amazing that you can get open against elite corners, but you got to make those catches. And 10 for 14... 10 catches out of 14 targets. And some of those were, I remember one in particular was kind of a tough contested catch. I was surprised that Cooper made, it's not usually in his wheelhouse. So if he's doing that, if he's turned a corner and, Amari Cooper, I think this week, especially in this matchup, is a top 10 receiver. So.
Talking sure. About how both Lockett and Metcalf could struggle. Honestly, yeah, it's there. I think the difference is going to be how New England can guard against a mobile quarterback who can create more time to have his receivers get open. But what if Greg Olsen and Will Dissly can do something at the tight end position? And that could either be catching passes, getting touchdowns. I know that last week, Greg Olsen was found in the end zone for them. I know it was a shootout game, but you know, it shows that there's already rapport there between Russell Wilson and Greg Olsen. That might just speak to how good Wilson is. That's not deniable. But they could also block to open up Chris Carson again. So I think that it's an intriguing matchup based on the different way the offenses could do things.
And I do wonder, what last week's is the Seahawks could score from distance, right? I mean, they it looks like they ran, what is this, four, six plays in the red zone, which, so I don't know if that's the case against New England. I don't think they're getting as many big scores. I think it'll be more in the red zone for Seattle. So I think, like last week, Chris Carson and David Moore led the team in red zone targets. Who would have predicted that? Like, those two lead the team in red zone targets. So it was a weird week. Travis Homer got the carry inside the five, not Chris Carson or Carlos Hyde. So Seahawks in the red zone were weird last week. And I do wonder if just the so few opportunities, they were just trying things out. Whereas next week, if they're forced to the red zone play after play, they're not scoring on their big plays and they have to grind it in the red zone. I think maybe more traditional, seeing more targets towards Metcalf and Lockett, who I believe last year Metcalf led the league in red zone or in end zone targets, targets when the receiver was in the end zone physically at the point of the target. So, you know, if he had zero last week, so I don't think that's continuing for much longer, which could be, I think will be for, if DK has success, he's going to have to score a touchdown. It won't, like Kayla said, it won't be accumulating massive yardage against Gilmore. It's going to be scoring in the red zone against Gilmore. I think that's where DK Metcalf's strength could be, using himself as a jump ball type of guy. So maybe, I think, yeah, looking at these rankings, I do think I do have some work to do with these receivers. Anywhere in the 9 through 20 range, I think there's some shifting to do. And again, knowing that Michael Thomas is out, I do have Emmanuel Sanders at 22. I think he probably should move up into the top 20, actually. So again, look for some changing of this of the rankings a little bit. Running back now. Christian McCaffrey at number one again. Shocker, right? anything?
Oh my God. I can't believe it.
Okay, so everyone agrees with Christian McCaffrey at number one, even though he's playing yeah. the Bucs.
Yes.
Tough defense, especially last year. The Bucs were the only team to shut McCaffrey down. It was week two, and they really, it was the only poor game he had last year. But Alvin Kamara last week showed that you can score touchdowns on the Bucs on the ground. So, and McCaffrey will always catch passes. Are there any controversies? Like, where's the first player you really think is misplaced?
It's time, Kyle. Raheem Mostert and Jared McKinnon. I am going for my homer pick here because I am strongly about this. I think you have them way too high.
Again, Mostert I have at 21, McKinnon at 32. Part of that is, again, as Alessandro, that's why I'm avoiding guys like Tevin Coleman and, well, Jeff Wilson didn't do anything because of the, I know what you're going to say, the interior run defense of the Jets, right? So give me the pass catching backs. But that didn't work last week because, you know, I was saying, okay, well, if that's the case, fade Zach Moss, play Devin Singletary. He's the pass catching back. Zach Moss ends up with the receiving touchdown. So I have no idea what to make of that. So I, especially given all the injuries that the 49ers have, given the nature of this game, I know it's a tough run defense, but if, you know, if it's any semblance of a blowout, you know the 49ers are just going to turn to Mostert and McKinnon, just run out the game. And if those two are going to be catching passes, presumably, I think more, maybe this week more so than any other week, and just to try to, you know, take advantage of that matchup, because you're right, they both might struggle on the ground. But yeah, I have Mostert 21 because I expect him to catch passes against the Jets, not because I expect him to run through and get a bunch of touchdowns against them.
Well, I will say this. So Singletary was targeted 7 times, and he got 23 yards on 5 receptions. Zach Moss was targeted 4 times, caught 3 of them for 16 yards and 1 touchdown. But their longest reception went for 8 yards and 9 yards. So I wouldn't be saying a whole lot of production, because if Zach Moss didn't get that touchdown, it would be a different ball game. But I would just say, because last week, Devin Singletary got 30 yards on 9 carries. Zach Moss got 11 yards on 9 carries. Did terrible on the ground. They got a combined 41 yards. Josh Allen ran for more than them and my team. But we're not going to get into that. I would say that, yes, they could just start pounding the ball as soon as they get, you know, I want to say a 3 score ahead of us. Because, good God, but No, I would put them a lot lower because even if they do the pass catching and once they do get the scores, then they're just going to ground pound it out and the Jets will just snuff them out and the clock will run out and they're zone two. But I would say that they would be a lot lower. I understand PPR, they would be great in half point, not so much, but I would say more McKinnon. I would put him higher than Mostert because Mostert is more of that power back running back. McKinnon can catch passes better. I should say it. McKinnon can catch passes better, so I would put him a little bit higher, but I would still put them in the same range because they probably get the same treatment and still be taken down a little bit harder because it didn't matter with Simmons or Singletary, they still got both taken down and they got minimal yardage at best. And then the other one is Singletary. He should be higher. Because the Dolphins, they gave up a lot of points on the ground. And, well, most of it was to Cam Newton. Super Cam! And so, I lost too, Kayla. It's fine.
To be fair to that, I probably should have Singletary ahead of Raheem Mostert. Right now, I have Mostert two spots ahead. I'm even thinking Zach Moss probably should be ahead of Mostert because I like Zach Moss's chances against the Dolphins. If he scored against the Jets defense, I think he could do well. So I think you might be right there.
Pass defense. That was a pass, not a rush. I mean, but the Dolphins still allowed 217 rushing yards. That's combined total
Which is why I said I think Moss will be able to score rushing touchdowns more easily this week, unlike last week. I mean, he had 8 red zone carries, and again, because did he finish the game with 2 touchdowns or just the one?
Moss, yes, one receiving touchdown, and that was just outside the red zone.
Yeah.
He got a bunch of carries inside, but he got stopped every
Yeah,
time.
couldn't. Yeah, super inefficient there. But yeah, so I think you might be right there. I think Mostert. I'm never complaining moving Mostert down. So yeah, I think probably, you know, I have Zach Moss at 26. Mostert at 26 probably makes sense. Could even say behind Adrian Peterson, as much as I don't want to.
I will give the Dolphins the mulligan because Cam Newton did rush it 15 times for 75 yards. So, I mean, there is a mulligan, but there was a lot of rushing between Newton, Michelle, Burkhead, JJ Taylor, who was one of my sleeper picks, woo! And Julian Edelman and James White. So, I mean, there was a lot of rushes. That's why they racked up a lot of yards. But it's just that defense, it was not prepared in any way, shape, or form. And I think that Moss and Singletary, just those two alone, even before you get into Allen, will just eat up that defense.
So I do want to comment on Singletary here for a second. In my sleeper article for this week, I have him as a sleeper. I think because he's returning to South Florida, since he's a native of there, that always gives players an extra little boost when they're returning home. But I think that Singletary makes more sense as a rusher this week. Kyle, you did bring up a good point about red zone carries and looks. But I expect Singletary to be on the field more this week than Moss. I think Singletary can pick up a rushing score, and even if they are in the red zone, I think the Dolphins' secondary is weak enough that he could easily be found in the short yardage for a pass, even though that's not his specialty. I think he has the potential to see a huge increase in handoffs, and see his kind of short yardage gains just stack up as the game goes on. And I think that just because Xavien Howard is reported to be almost at full snap count this week, and opposite him will be Byron Jones. So I think that's going to limit the yards on the outside, and will create more opportunities in the middle. So while it's possible that, you know, Cole Beasley and Zach Moss, the pass catching back, could get those extra plays in the middle, I think that Buffalo's going to go at more of a running approach with Josh Allen and Singletary.
And I do have, you know, Alessandro referenced Stephon Diggs at number 40, so I'm kind of thinking that as well, that the three best players to have for the Bills are the three that are going to be running a lot: Moss, Singletary, and the quarterback himself, of course. So do you have any other comments about that range? It seems like we're focusing on between, you know, the borderline running back two, running back three, 21 through 25, 28 kind of thing.
I would move Mark Ingram down. He saw more snaps at running back than J.K. Dobbins last week, but it was only by 3. And when it came to touches and yards, he was more so competing with Gus Edwards instead of Dobbins. Dobbins was also used on the goal line. So even though they're using Houston, and I expect them to score a lot of points, it's really going to come down to, I think, Lamar Jackson and J.K. Dobbins finding the end zone. So I'm nervous to play Ingram over Singletary. I don't know how much I would move him down, but I definitely think Singletary should be above him and Ingram should be a little bit lower.
Yeah, so I agree with that. Ingram should be down. And the only person I would pull up would be Benny Snell. I don't see James Conner on here, but Conner was a full goal practice today. But that's yeah. That was his first full goal practice. He did not practice the first time, and so he went to practice today. So that scares me a little bit in that insight. So I would put Benny Snell as the main back behind the Pittsburgh offensive line, and I don't want to say swap Ingram and Snell, but I definitely want them to swap positions. I want Snell to be higher than Ingram.
Honestly, if James Conner plays, Snell's not in my top 40. I put Snell at 35 against a tough run defense in Denver, by the way, that I know late kind of bent to Derrick Henry, but for the most part actually shut him down pretty early. I know Derrick Henry kind of does that. He comes alive in the second half, and he did that again. Shocker. But it was a really, I mean, he ran for 3.7 yards a carry. It wasn't an efficient game. So, yeah, if I find, you know, Snell being at 35 was under the impression that James Conner wasn't playing at all. But finding out now that James Conner is actually practicing, I'm probably taking Snell off this list. And, well, I don't have James Conner on the list, so that's, I'm going to have to replace them. So, yeah, definitely going to be, and, you know, I'd probably just put James Conner down that low just because, you know, it's, again, tough run defense, not sure his health coming back. I'm not raising Benny Snell up, though. If it was a great matchup, he probably would be higher, but it's a tough matchup, so.
I mean, I would raise Dobbins higher if you're talking about moving anybody up.
True. I have Dobbins at 36. He probably could. Yeah, and Caleb, you know, obviously made your thoughts clear about you preferred, almost preferred Dobbins to Ingram. Like, would you rank Dobbins ahead of Ingram? Like, that much of a difference?
Surprisingly, yes, because of the goal line work. I would be less inclined to do that if Ingram had a lot more rush attempts than Dobbins did, but it was only 3. And, you know, Gus Edwards had 4, so, you know, it was still only a 6-carry difference. So when you're going between 3 running backs, while that kind of screams committee, when you have a rushing quarterback, you're going to want the guy who's getting the goal line work. So that's Dobbins.
Yeah. I mean, and Mark Ingram didn't get 2 red zone carries, but they weren't inside the 5, as Kayla mentioned. That was Dobbins' job.
Yeah. And yeah, that's only a 1-week sample size. And, you know, you could go on the ear of caution on this one. But if it repeats this week, then especially in week 3, I would put Dobbins above Ingram.
I did wonder if it was a 1-week thing that they're trying to mislead teams. Obviously, my rankings reflect that. I do think Ingram is still the main guy, but maybe he's not. So, yeah, could see some shifting around there. Maybe putting them, because right, I guess 22 for Ingram, 36 for Dobbins. You're probably right, Kayla. They probably shouldn't be that far apart. I do think with Zal, it's, you know, him and Mostert, 21, 22, I'm talking Ingram, Mostert, they're probably both too high. I think that's really the problem. I think lowering them kind of balances things out. Maybe I could move Dobbins up a couple spots.
Let me throw this out there for you guys. How would you feel about throwing either Frank Gore or Michael Pirine up on this list on about 40?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
Not against that run defense.
The run defense that gave up 180 yards?
To Kenyon Drake and a quarterback who was taken first overall because of his rushing ability. Yeah.
Okay, so remove him, and then we have 99 yards. Okay. Or 89 yards. That's fine.
Honestly, that's not even my reason. I think this game could be heavily low scoring. So if teams aren't scoring, I don't want to just rely on yards. That's my thinking.
But I'm thinking from a PPR setting, because both to your point from before, Mostert and McKinnon, I mean, they got, let's see, Mostert got 5 targets, caught 4 of them. Kent got 5 targets, caught 3 of them. I mean, that's 3 points right there, 4 points right there, plus the rushing yards. I mean,
it's the same concept for me. So I guess since Kyle's obviously gonna do reshuffling and everybody's gonna, most people are gonna get renumbered on this list. Really, the
That's
only
true.
person that I would even considering starting Frank Gore over would be DeAndre Swift or
Cam Akers?
maybe,
I
but.
mean, Malcolm Brown did surprise me, and he got the main role, but that may have just been that week.
Yeah, or
Well,
maybe Boston Scott. Like, let's say Miles Sanders plays, then it's relevant. But we don't know if Sanders is going to play.
my thing is, I don't know how healthy Sanders is. Like, even if Sanders plays, is he getting 100%? And we saw with the Rams, they were more vulnerable on the ground than they were through the air, right? Like, it seemed like the Cowboys had a easier time running on them than they did. I don't know how much. So I could see like the Eagles kind of going out, just okay, we're gonna put Sanders in, put Scott in, a run heavy approach. That's why I have Scott up there. The truth is, Alessandro, you didn't name the right Jets running back. It's if you're gonna play any of them, it's Josh Adams. He got two targets. He got the goal line carry. It wasn't even Bell. The carry inside the five. I don't know if Josh Adams got that after Bell exited, but it was Josh Adams.
It was
So
after Bill exited.
okay, but it's still like clearly though, it's not gonna be Gore as much as Frank. It's not gonna be. P. Ryan, the rookie, it's Josh Adams. So I could see it. You know what? At 40 over Akers, it's take Akers off and put Josh Adams at 40. I could do that, to be honest. Because again, he got the goal line back, or he got the goal line carry. It was only one. It was the only they went what? They ran three plays inside the red zone.
And to point out something earlier, Miles Sanders had a full practice today and yesterday, so he is all indications that he will go.
Honestly, I just realized there's a player I don't have in my top 40 that probably should be. It's Latavius Murray. Maybe that
Oh
is
yeah,
it.
I just picked him up during this podcast.
Ballage is on the practice squad. Josh Adams is up. I
Okay.
think I'm playing Latavius Murray over Josh Adams, but I think if Alessandro, like, I'm really close on Josh Adams. Like, I could see him in the top 45, but not. It's not Gore. It's not the rookie P. Ryan without any work beforehand for sure. I think it's if you're gonna play a Jets running back this week, people, it's Josh Adams. Because he's your probably going to be the goal line guy, and again, he got two targets, so they're comfortable passing to him.
Well, they have to. They don't have anyone else. No, I'm just asking because,
Yeah,
I mean, I'm
it's
seeing
valid.
Myles Gaskin, Tony Pollard, J.K. Dobbins, Benny Snell, Rojo, DeAndre Swift. There's a lot of rookies down here at the bottom, including JT and Cam Akers.
I'm nervous about Gaskin because no reports before the game indicated that he was going to get snaps. So the fact that he led the team in rushing with 40 of their 87 yards, I think it's really because he was the most experienced back on the roster with the playbook, and that's just because Jordan Howard Matic came in, still learning everything, didn't really have any game experience. I think it was smart to put in Gaskins instead of Patrick Laird, who I think would have been his only competition. But going forward, I have absolutely no idea what they're going to do, especially against Buffalo's defense, who really might not allow them many yards, regardless if it's through the air or rushing. I mean, if they can't get their receiving game going, last week was abysmal, then they're not going to run the football either. I do think their offensive line played really well, though, so if they can get some more things clicking on the outside, I was shocked at how well the offensive line did for Miami, if I'm being honest with you.
Which and I was wondering about that, the experience, right? Gaskin was on the team last year. Jordan Howard, Matt Breida both brought in this offseason. And, you know, we've talked about enough. Completely remade offensive line. I wonder if he came into that game knowing the blocking assignments better than some of the offensive linemen did, just because he's had so much more experience with it than them. And I almost wonder, you know, in hindsight, now it kind of makes sense that he actually led them. But is that something that, okay, that was just for game one. Now that everything's established, is he back to number three, or because he had success, do you think Flores sticks with him?
So to your point, I don't think that everything is established. I think Austin Jackson, if we're talking about the offensive line, blew me out of the water. I am shocked at how well he did. And I think that's great for the Dolphins moving forward. But I don't think after one game, Breida and Howard suddenly know exactly what they have to do behind a still learning line. So I think maybe in the short term, Gaskin could be looked at as the lead back if you're going to peg somebody. But we saw Howard get the goal line carry. He saved his day. I mean, he had 8 rushes for 7 yards, but he had a touchdown.
It was a very Kalen Ballage-esque stat line. It seems like he's really trying to replace Kalen Ballage. I don't know why you would.
If we looked at Breida, he didn't get any work in the Dolphins game until 6:40 remaining in the first half. So I think that was also just working in. And I think as the offensive line gets better, obviously that opens up the holes in the run game, but that also paves the way for the pass catching back Breida. I feel like I'm rambling on too much because I love the Dolphins, but I think it's really hard to peg. But if we're going with experience and playbook, then Gaskin could be the leading rusher for the Dolphins this week, but I don't know if you want 40 yards in your lineup or not. I'd like to see him find the end zone, because suddenly if he finds the end zone, then he has 10 points.
All right, so quarterback or tight end? Any we don't have to necessarily focus in depth on both. If there's one position we really feel like we want to hammer in on, feel free.
I do want to talk about tight ends, just simply for news. Three of them, in fact. George Kittle, he did not practice all week, so we don't know his status game time, because he did not practice all week. They're saying they're putting him on rest because of his MCL sprain, but they don't know if he's going to play this week. All indications that he may play, but they're being cautious about it.
Sorry, I was just saying, it sounds, yeah, I've been reading reports too. It sounds like he can play without practicing. He can go the whole week, no practice, and then suit up Sunday. So that'll be tricky to monitor, right? Because, you know, sometimes, okay, some teams are, if you don't practice at all, you're not getting on the field. It seems like the 49ers are not one of those teams. As much as Dante Pettis doesn't take practice serious enough, apparently, for Kyle Shanahan. But, you know, Kittle's one of those guys. If he's healthy enough to play, he'll play without practicing. But sorry to interrupt, Alessandro.
No, you're fine. I mean, Kittle's a gamble play, because if he plays, then he's just going to eat and eat and eat and absolutely murder that offense. But if he doesn't play, if he decides that he is going to play, who knows what kind of Kittle we're going to get. Because so that's a gamble play right there. I just got throwing it out there. Geno Smith, with the loss of A.J. Brown and a possible loss of Corey Davis, I think that he will do much better, and I think he actually will break the top five, possibly the top three, because he probably will be targeted a lot. Without those two top targets, they're down to, what, Adam Humphries, Geno Smith.
Sorry, what about Corey Davis?
He's banged up.
Yeah, but he was banged up going into last week, and he still played. Like, did he aggravate his injury?
They're thinking so. Hold on. I'm pulling up the full report. But they're thinking that he did.
Okay. I thought it was just rest because of the injury. They rested him last week going into the week, not a full practice, and he performed really well, so I thought maybe they were just continuing that.
Pulling up right now. A.J. Brown, I did talk about with the bruised bone. He's not likely to play. Receiver Corey Davis, hamstring, and safety Kenny Vaccaro were back to practice. Both were limited in practice, taking small snaps, doing light work today. Titans add cornerback Malcolm Butler to injury report, listed him as limited. And then they were talking about Clowney and Vic Beasley. So he was at practice, but he was very limited. So that doesn't bode well for me. Because if you limit a wide receiver at practice, if he comes back and he's still heavily limited, that doesn't bode well. So he may play, but I don't see much of a production. So either regardless, I would put Gianna a lot higher.
I do have Jonnu Smith at 10, and I do love hearing that he's not high enough. That is great. I love music to my ears.
You're welcome. But I mean, with the loss of those wide receiver, wide receiver, possible two, he's more likely a target to go. And then Hayden Hurst, I think that he and Chris Herndon should swap, because that's going to be a shootout between them and Dallas. And Hurst is definitely going to get a lot of love. And Herndon against San Francisco, I love that matchup, because San Francisco probably will give a lot of points to the tight end position. We don't know, because the Cardinals don't have a tight end position that we all like. So can't tell you about that. I could tell you that Herndon's going to get a lot of targets, but I don't know what they're truly like against a tight end that can actually play. So I don't trust that. So I would swap those two.
And I'm going to piggy off of the Hayden Hurst talk. Last season, Dallas gave up 104 receptions to tight ends. So that's 6.5 a game if you go all 16. And I think if Hurst is on the plus side of 6 targets, that he is in line to possibly find the end zone and get around 60 yards. So with Matt Ryan throwing for 450 yards again last week, it was a little disappointing that Hurst only saw 38, but it was his first game as a Falcon and his debut, and this organization did handpick him to replace Austin Hooper. So I think it's just a matter of time before he gets started, and I think this is a really good matchup where he should be a little bit higher in ranks too.
The problem is, it is so early, but last week was they were down against the Seahawks. It was a shootout the entire game. Matt Ryan threw 54 attempts, 5 targets to Hurst. It was, as Caleb mentioned, it was Russell Gage with 12 targets. Julio, Russell Gage, Calvin Ridley. That's 36 of the 54 targets. I don't know that it's going to be that much different this week. I mean, Hurst, I feel like if the reason that he's slow is because he hasn't learned the offense yet up to the level that they want, I don't know that one week is making that difference. So I think that's for me. Kayla, you said if he gets on the north side of 6 targets, I don't think that's a guarantee.
I think he has a better chance than he did last week. I don't know how much merit that gets, because again, this is another week where Atlanta could try to spread targets out, so I think that could only potentially benefit Hurst. I'm not saying he's a strong start, but I think I would put him over Dalton Schultz, who you have right ahead of Hayden Hurst at 22, and I think Jack Doyle's banged up too, so going against a tough Minnesota secondary, got obliterated by Adams at the tight end position, is something to consider, as well as CJ Uzoma at Cleveland on Thursday.
And you know what, to be fair to Doyle, it's the corners that are the weakness of the Vikings. So actually defending a tight end, they did really well with that, Eric Kendricks. So you know what, that might be, if nothing else, just maybe swapping Hurst and Doyle might be in order. The thing with Uzoma is he got the targets with Cincinnati last week.
And Cleveland secondary is too banged up. I could see Uzoma should actually be higher, because Greedy Williams and one of their other corners and a safety is down. They're not playing this week.
I think the whole point of this is for me is I need to see it first with Hurst. I don't want to just assume he's walking into what Austin, because I mean, Austin Hooper took time before Matt Ryan really made him that number one target. It was, I think, Hooper's third year before he was really kind of okay. Every week you can kind of, you know what to expect with him target wise, and then fourth year he really exploded. But and Hurst has already been in the NFL. I don't think it's going to take that long. But again, it did take, took Matt Ryan a little bit of time to get that chemistry. So I don't think it's getting solved in one week.
Right. And then the only thing that I would add is I would jump Rob Gronkowski, who's playing at home against Carolina, up just because I think he gets a touchdown. Whereas I'm not so sure that Hockenson, Gesicki, Herndon, Higby, Dawson Knox, even Hurst, I don't know if they get touchdowns. And I think he'll get his first one this week, especially because if Chris Godwin doesn't play.
Yep, exactly.
That opens up Gronk.
And that was why this is pre, knowing that Godwin really was risking of missing time. That's where this ranking was. I have OJ Howard at 14. I think at this point, even if Godwin plays, I think I'm moving OJ Howard up.
At least above Fant.
I would say I loved how many targets Jimmy Graham got last week, specifically in the red zone. I love the matchup against the Giants. I think it'd be right there. It'd either be Howard or Graham. That might even come down to if Godwin's out, move Howard ahead of Graham, which is 11, OJ Howard at 12 then. And if Godwin's in, then, keep Howard there. So I think I got to at least move Howard up to be a tight end one, which I have been 14, so it'll only be a couple spots. But I think, Gronk probably deserves to be closer to it. So I think that's just, again, I think the last time I updated these rankings was Tuesday night. It's been a little bit. I both your insights are really good, and it does kind of help me with these rankings. So I did want to wait for hear from you two before adjusting anything. We can quickly talk about quarterbacks if there's anything you feel that's egregious.
The only one I can see is Cam. I feel he's too high. I understand he did great against Miami, but Miami and Seattle are way too different defenses. And with Jamal Adams being on the Seattle defense and knowing how hard he hits, if Cam Newton even comes in sniffing distance of Jamal Adams, that may be but by Cam. And that's not an exaggeration because he hits really, he is the hardest hitter in the NFL that's been recorded through some PFF grade, but then again, it's PFF. But anyways, I would put Cam a lot lower because I don't think they're going to rush him as much. I mean, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, that's a hell of a hitting core, and I don't think they're going to risk Cam Newton rushing that much, so I think his floor is a lot lower. Maybe a rushing touchdown when they get into the red zone, something short so that way he doesn't get obliterated in open field. But I don't think Cam's going to go for 75 yards on 15 rushes like he did before. I think he's going to do a lot less, and that's going to drop his floor. So I would actually drop Cam, who's currently at 10, probably down near Teddy Bridgewater at 18. Like that's he's going to fall far if he doesn't have that rushing upside. So. And then I would change Tom Brady versus for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Oh, wait, there it goes.
I changed it.
I just now noticed that. I'm like, wait, what?
He did throw a pick six last
week. Yeah, I was going to say that they're used to their quarterback playing against them in Tampa.
James Winston, 30 for 30. Anyways, I would lower Brady because while he is playing, hold on. While he is playing a weaker Carolina secondary.
Rankings-wise, when you were saying, okay, move Cam down, my instinct was, you know what, I could probably swap him with Tom. Move Tom up and move Cam down. That almost made sense to me, going, again, Panthers defense. So now that you're saying move all these guys down, who's moving up then?
Don't scream.
Yo, give me Gardner. That's mine.
No. Yeah, Joe Burrow.
I do have him at 20. I was considering him a little higher.
Here's why. Like I said, the Cleveland Browns are without their top two corners, their top linebacker. They've been out since training camp, and now there are a bunch of questionable, more than likely not going to play guys. Jarvis Landry is going to play, but there's a bunch of guys, including two defensive guys, that may not play. That's going to increase, if anything, Joe Burrow. And we saw what he did against the Chargers defense, and that's Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, Cam Hayward, Chris Harris Jr. That's a lot of big-name guys that are very good, and he was almost able to beat them if it wasn't for Brady Bullock and pulling, I guess, a hamstring on the tying field goal kick. Good God.
Immediately preceding I don't know how you both felt about this, but the offensive pass interference, they called it really tight last week, and took away a touchdown by the Bengals there.
It was OPI because so the way I've been watching a lot of these, if the arm fully extends, like you see the elbow, the arm fully extended, that's offensive pass interference. Now, if it's like a little push and the elbow is still crooked, then that's not OPI because we saw this exact same call. This is the only time I'm going to credit the referees. We saw the exact same call in almost every single game for pass interference and OPIs.
It was consistent. It almost seemed like a point of emphasis this year. Okay, the offensive pass interference really needs to get called. My issue with specifically the Green one is the corner that was covering him had his arm around Green's hip. And I know lately they've been saying, okay, the arm on a player isn't enough. You've got to actually pull. But at a certain point, if a defender has an arm against you, what can the receiver do to break free of that? That's my thing. And if nothing, then how is that not pass interference the other way?
You're not wrong. I'm agreeing with you there. You're not wrong. I just, seeing the play from OPI standpoint, I mean, Green is a bigger receiver. He probably could have gone ball because there was a little bit of a height difference. But I get what you're saying, Kyle. But They were accurate on the call, and that was OPI because of full extension. Now, if he would have done a double move, yeah, and that's the only thing, and only ever time you'll ever hear me credit the referees for anything good, because I hate him. So I would move up Joe Burrow because he is going to have AJ Green, he is going to have Joe Mixon, he's got Tyler Boyd, John Ross is back, so there's a lot of weapons that we saw under Andy the Red Rifle Dalton do decently with, and Joe Burrow seems to be an upgrade over Andy Dalton. It's for right now. I know he's brand new, still has got that rookie smell on him. It's a nice indication. Plus, he has a rushing upside. So I think that he's going to do very well against Cleveland, who has a very banged-up secondary. So I think he should be moved up.
That is a good point, especially the Bengals coming off. Yeah, as Alessandro mentioned, they beat the Chargers by losing in the most Chargers way possible. Like a missed field goal, an injury on a missed field goal. Doesn't that sound like something the Chargers would do? So I found that funny that, you know, you told me that would happen in this game. I would guarantee, 90% that's the Chargers kicker that injured himself. No. Oh, Bengals actually lost that way. So good for the Chargers? Question mark?
I'm going to jump in here with quarterbacks. Kyler Murray needs to switch places with Deshaun Watson, and Watson needs to go behind Aaron Rodgers. So for our listeners, Deshaun Watson is 5, Kyler Murray is 7, and Aaron Rodgers is 9. I think Washington's defense succeeded last week and overshot projections literally because of the two missing offensive linemen in Philadelphia, and the fact that one of those backup linemen also are on their third string linemen. Miles Sanders didn't play. It was just a rough day for the offensive line and just offense in general, aside from Dallas Goedert. I think Kyler Murray's rushing abilities could torch the Washington football team more so than Deshaun Watson will be able to move the ball against the Baltimore Ravens, who I think has the best defense.
Just a player Kayla didn't mention, Matt Ryan's at 8. So again, that shootout against Dallas, so you're saying below him too, for Deshaun Watson, that is?
Yes.
And I guess my thinking was, I expect Baltimore to win that game. I expect Baltimore to be up by a lot in that game. So it's tons of pass attempts for Watson. So I think that was more my thinking there, is that he's going to have to throw a lot to keep up. Whereas I know I have Russell Wilson right behind. The Seahawks are favored. That might be a game where, you know, Wilson won't throw as much. And specifically for Kyler Murray, you're right. He probably he's either got to be higher or probably lower, to be honest, because it's probably going one of either two ways. That Washington pass rush is for real, and Murray's not going to be able to find space to run behind that Arizona offensive line, and it's going to look like what it was at Philly last week, or the. In spite of the offensive line woes, which isn't so much because of injury, that's more just lack of talent. Great job building that offensive line, Steve Keim. You know, it's maybe in spite of that, Kyler Murray's speed is actually able to beat the Washington pass rush, and he's amazing. They have no answer for him. So you might be right. 7 might almost, it's almost got to either go up or go down from there. Because it's either going to be amazing or horrible. So I do, and again, having him at 7, I kind of am leaning towards maybe being better. So I think, you know what, I probably should have him ahead of Russell Wilson. I don't know if I can put him ahead of Deshaun. Consider it. But I think, yeah, Murray probably deserves to be in the top 6 at least. So no one has any issues with Josh Allen ahead of Patrick Mahomes, by the way?
No.
Yeah, okay. No. That the lack of faith in the Miami defense is strong, and so that's clearly my reasoning for it. So
same.
Same.
Sorry, Kayla.
Hey, if I didn't agree, we'd have an issue. But we are still rebuilding.
Wait, okay. He's not on here. I have to ask you guys. Jimmy G, do you think he could be a top 25 this week?
No.
I mean, he can. I don't think he will, because I don't have him in my top 25, obviously. I see heavy Mostert McKinnon. I've gone with that, and I think that continues, especially if Kittle isn't 100% healthy. I know Jordan Reed is talented, but that's a big drop off though. So I think that's also hurting Garoppolo.
Okay, I was just wondering because the Jets secondary is terrible, and I actually had a guy at NFL Commish. Send me a thing. He has Derek Carr and Jimmy G, and I wanted to say the obvious answer was Jimmy G, but I didn't know because game script dictating saying gear ahead, run the ball.
Yeah.
So
I think that, and if I mean I'm saying Carr no matter what, but if you really believe in Garoppolo, I would wait to see if Kittle's healthy and playing. I'd consider it, but if Kittle's not playing, I'm off of Garoppolo completely.
Yes.
Because, I mean, who's the good? I mean, Kendrick Bourne's probably leading the team in targets then, right? Which, I mean, to my Kendrick, all my Kendrick Bourne shares are happy about that. But, I mean, I don't know who else is happy about that.
Yeah, just you.
All right. Well, I mean, hopefully our listeners are happy with this episode. I mean, I'm happy talking to the both of you. Talk about how my rankings are so bad. No. You know, a little bit of especially wide receiver probably needs quite a bit of tinkering here. And I'll get to that soon, folks. But again, thanks for sticking with us. You can follow us on Twitter at @FBC_fantasypod. Comment about anything about the show, about these rankings if you wish. You can also reach out to all of your co-hosts individually. Alessandro's at @AM_Senator. Kayla's at @NorthToKayla74. I'm at @SenraSays. Like I mentioned at the start of the episode, download the full press coverage app. And leave it to my co-host. Any final thoughts?
Hopefully my fantasy teams do not go 0-2 like my Dolphins.
Wade Johnson, sell the Jets.
So I think I'm definitely taking Buffalo in the Survivor Pool this week. I do try to avoid divisional matchups, but clearly that didn't affect them last week. I think probably should again this week. So
you sure you don't want to take the 49ers?
No, I'm pretty sure I don't. As much as I think they're going to beat the Jets, there's no George Kittle. There's that little.
So you're saying there's a chance?
There's always a chance.
I'm saying there's a chance.
But I also don't want to necessarily bank on the fantasy production from those Jets players either.
God, no, I wouldn't.
So don't play Jets players. Yeah, because you all came to this pod to hear all that great information of don't play Jets players. That's what we took from all this. But again,
it's not like it's common knowledge or anything.
So hopefully this helped. Hopefully the advice we actually gave will help you, and that you'll keep coming back to us here on the Full Press Fantasy Pod.